From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Eric Logan, filling in for Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made for me a couple of weeks ago when New Hope for Market View Heights, an outreach of New Hope Free Methodist Church in the city, partnered with Lollipop Farm, Humane Society of Greater Rochester, and the City of Rochester Gantt Center from the City Department of Recreation and Human Services to host one of Lollipop's community pet care events. At that event, over 130 dogs were vaccinated for rabies, distemper, and parvo. Over 1,000 pounds of pet food was given away along with leashes, collars, dog beds, etc. Honestly, I was just a tag along with my wife, Ann, who helped to collaborate for the event, and I was surprised to learn that some pet owners who attended were at risk of eviction from their rental places if their dogs were not vaccinated. Frankly, my eyes were opened for the first time to a community need I didn't realize existed. Typically, these days, my household is made up of, in addition to Ann and myself, a dog and a couple of cats, though we don't have a dog at the present, and access to quality pet care has rarely been an issue for us. A quick drive out to Lollipop Farm in Fairport, or even a longer drive to Cornell University's Pet Hospital in Ithaca, is no big deal for us. But for so many more pet owners with more limited schedules or transportation options, lack of access can mean the difference of life or death for a beloved animal companion. And more recently, with the closure of animal hospital emergency services, all of our pets, yours and mine, have been at greater risk. As I mixed and interacted with the attendees waiting for the event to start, some of them were in line for an hour before the event, I became aware of just how important this outreach is to so many people. I'd already said yes when Connections producer Megan Mack asked if I was interested in filling in for Evan Dawson, but I hadn't decided on a topic. At the end of the event, Ann looked at me and said, "You need to talk about this." I immediately realized that you, our Connections listeners, would both benefit from this discussion and would bring knowledge and insights to this conversation for everyone's benefit. Trust me, I'll be learning as much as you or even from you as we speak today. Joining me at the table today are our guests, Dr. Bruce Ingersoll, a doctor of veterinary medicine, co-founder and veterinarian at Rochester Emergency Veterinary Services, or REVS, and a veterinarian at the York Animal Hospital. He is a member of the American Veterinary Medical Association and the Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care Society. Welcome, Dr. Bruce.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so good for you to be here today. Thank you for coming. Lindsay Kuhn from Lollipop Farm, animal intake and resource manager. She's been the key behind a lot of Lollipop's admissions diversion programs, and we'll talk about diversion programs, including their pet pantry and the community outreach events. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
It is so good to have you here. And Ashley Zay, who is the Lollipop Farm Director of Communications. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's good that you're here. We did reach out to several local organizations to talk how to support animals, to discuss how to support animals and their families and pets and their owners during the veterinary crisis, but we understand schedules are difficult. If you have benefited from an outreach effort, a local organization, or a grassroots group, feel free to call us and tell us about it. You can be a part of the conversation by calling 844-295-8255 toll-free, or the local number in Rochester is 585-263-9994. To email the show, you can use connections.org. So, Lindsay, tell us a little bit about your role.
Well, my role at the shelter is, well, a few different things. So I oversee all the animal admissions, the animals that come into the shelter. But one of our huge goals at the shelter is to only take the animals in the most need. So if pets have a loving home and the owner just needs some support, we have some programs in place to support that owner and keep that pet with their family. So that's really a huge focus of what I do. In addition to that, I oversee the pet food pantry as well. And that's a pretty popular program. It supports a lot of people, and we're really proud of that.
So I was saying in our opening that I went along as a tag along because our church was doing some things with you. Mm-hmm. And I got there and was socializing, hanging out with some of the people there, and my eyes were really being opened. And then I saw how much stuff you guys gave away and the vaccination, 130 people. And then, of course, in preparation for this program, I went out on your website because I needed to learn something, because that was like the extent of my exposure. And I was like, wow, y'all are doing a lot.
Yeah.
We weren't the only outreach. In fact, you've got a couple more coming up. Do you want to talk about how many outreaches you do a year?
Yeah, so this year we've taken on 6 different events. We have 2 more coming up. The next one is going to be at Father Tracy Advocacy Center on North Clinton Avenue, and that's going to be August 14th. It starts at 10 p.m., runs to 2, but the line does close early if we run out of supplies, so get there early. And then that event will be just dogs only, so only dog vaccines at that event. But our following event on August 27th, that's going to be at Greater Harvest Church. That's located on Driving Park, not far from Lake. That one's going to be 10 to 2, also does cats at that event, so dogs and cats both.
And my understanding is, and I'm just letting all of our guests know, if I say something incorrect, don't go, oh, because he's the host, he must be right, or I can't contradict him. I am learning a lot through this interview and through some of the research that I did. The reasons why the cats weren't included at Gant Center was because we were all outdoors, and it was kind of hard to keep it, or impossible to keep the cats contained.
Yeah, so it's really important that when we're vaccinating cats, we have a secure, small indoor space. So if the cat gets frightened and takes off, we have it contained, we can catch it. We don't want anybody to lose their pet coming to these events. So we have to have a safe space to do that. So that's why that event did not include cats. But the event at Greater Harvest on the 27th of August will include cats.
One of the things that moved me the greatest in seeing that was learning that people might get evicted if they didn't get their animals vaccinated. And people already have enough housing insecurity. And to think about that their loved, beloved pet could be the cause of them having to move again. Do you see a lot of that?
We do. So we often get calls that people are moving into new apartments or homes, and the lease may have a requirement for minimally vaccines, but sometimes also spay and neuter. And when we get those kind of calls, we really try to help that person. We're fortunate to have the SNP program, which is our spay neuter incentive program, providing low cost spay neuter and vaccines. And we are even fortunate enough to be able to support people additionally who even that amount of money might be too much for. They can call in and talk to us, and we can figure out a plan to work together to get what they need to keep their pet.
Dr. Ingersoll, access is a big deal. And I listened to a program that you were here on Connections with Evan in November of last year. And you were just in the process. I tried to do my homework. You were just in the process of setting up the new organization. How is that going, and what's going on there? That's REVS, right?
Yeah, correct. Rochester Emergency Veterinary Services, or REVS. It's going well. We opened our doors February 1st, and I think people were lined up an hour before our doors opened to be seen. We're seeing, in all honesty, more cases than we can we actually treat at this point. We're in a small facility right now, and so one of our big things is trying to find a new building that will allow us to treat more patients than the small number that we're doing now, because unfortunately, pretty much every night we are turning away people to Buffalo and to their regular vets the next day. But it's going well. Like I said, we're very busy. Our support staff is wonderful. Working on getting full-time doctors by October 1st, we're going to have a full slate of doctors to keep us open 24/7 by then. So,
wow.
So in about 6 or 8 months, we've done some pretty significant work in the area.
So you're not open 24/7 right now.
Ish. So. We receive patients Monday through Thursday night, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. They can stay with us during the day. We have support staff that oversees them during the day, but we do not take in new cases because we do not have the ability to do that during the weekdays. And then Friday, 7 p.m. to Monday, 7 a.m., we are open 24/7. So
how much money are you trying to raise in order to pull this off? It looks like last November I heard it was a staggering amount, a lot of money to open up a new place.
It is a huge amount. We are different than Lollipop in that we are a nonprofit. However, we're trying to keep costs. We don't do the subsidized or free services that Lollipop offers. So people coming in pay a price. We are cheaper in general, I can't say that for everywhere, than other emergency facilities in the, you know, New York State area. And we're trying to be conscious of that, of trying to make it, you know, accessible and affordable emergency care, because not everyone can afford, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for their pet. And so we try to keep that in mind. That being said, we didn't start with very much. We had a significant donations from donors. We had Monroe County Comita grant that helped us get started. Unfortunately, the new building to increase our capacity is going to cost us about another $500,000. So we will be talking to the community fairly soon about a donation program, hopefully, so we can get into that space and grow to where we need to be.
I don't think $500,000 is staggering.
I mean, that's probably the low end, and you know, I get nervous about six figure numbers.
Right, but you know, we live. Honestly, I am continuously impressed with the community that we live in. We have people who have funds and resources, and people that care about their pets, and when they understand the need. You know, they will come out of their pocket. You know, my wife has always been a donor to Lollipop, right? But after hearing the stories from the people that received free vaccinations, I'm going to be a donor too, right? Because that it made it, it I'm seeing that it makes a difference in people's lives. Ashley, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much, first off. But, you know, Lollipop Farm has been around for over 150 years, and during that time we've seen animal welfare really change. And especially even over the last decade, the way we treat people that are having problems and the way we are looking at these challenges is a lot different. Where, you know, when 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was more just admissions, get your pet in, and then rehoming. And we were seeing shelters being more of like that landing base for a pet to their next new home. Now you're seeing shelters around the nation, including Lollipop Farm, where we are looking to see how can we keep this pet in its loving home, and can we support families in better ways so that they can keep their pet, because that is the best place for them. You know, you were talking about accessibility earlier and people that may have evictions due to not having vaccinations. But people don't realize vaccinations actually open up a whole suite of services. Hmm. One of our top reasons why we may see a dog come in may be because of behavior difficulties. But without vaccinations, they may not be able to get into training programs and things like that to get past those. So, you know, these vaccination clinics, they really are supportive, and they are going to help pets stay in those homes.
As the interviewer, as the host, the guest host of Connections, it is not my job to be your cheerleader. My job is to ask questions. But I will admit that I learned some things, right? And sometimes you don't understand the importance of something until you experience it yourself. We've gone through the pain of having to put animals down, but we have not gone through the discomfort of not knowing where we can get help for our animals, because we have the resources. We, like I said, driving to Cornell, we did that with Soren a couple of different times, and with Bear. If that's what it takes, that's what it takes. But I was standing with people that there's no way in the world they could have done that, right? And I became keenly aware of that. And because I became keenly aware of it, now it's sort of like, oh, now my eyes are open. I apologize for being so dense that I have to actually experience something to understand it. But that happens, right? We're human beings.
Yeah, I think that's part of the human experience. I know, Lindsay, your team, like, they have 1,000 stories of being able to help a family keep their pet. I know we were just talking about one in particular, about the woman with her cat.
Yeah, so we have a client. This one is a wonderful person, but she's homebound. She is bedridden. And she has 2 orange cats. They're the cutest cats ever, by the way. And they're pretty much her life. And she is a regular pantry client. We've branched out and done some delivery to become more accessible to the people that need us. And she is a regular client, and we know that if she lost this resource and didn't have that support, That would be the end of pet ownership for her. And the human-animal bond is so important, and they play such a big role in her life. And we are here, and we want to continue supporting her and those cats, because that's a family, and we want to keep them together.
I will have to admit, I'm not the kind of animal person that my lovely wife is, but that's okay, right? Because I still love the animals when they're there. It's just that I'm not the person who would go out and say, oh, I got to have a dog. But I saw the importance of people's animals, their pets, their companions. I'm going to stop using the word even pet, because it's really their companions in so many ways, and how important it was, and the additional stability that it brought to people's lives who may not have that stability in other areas. So I was very impressed with that. Just in case you just joined us, I'm Eric Logan here as a guest host filling in for Evan Dawson on Connections. We're talking to Dr. Bruce Ingersoll, a DVM co-founder and veterinarian at Rochester Emergency Veterinary Services and a veterinarian at York Animal Hospital, with Lindsay Kuhn from Lollipop Farm, who's an animal intake and resource manager, and Ashley Zay, Lollipop Farm Director of Communications. And, of course, we're here with you and your calls. When you call, the telephone numbers, which I have to put in front of me again, 844-295-8255, toll free, or in the Rochester area, 585-263-9994, or email, you can use connections.org. Now, I'm going to ask the controversial question, because that's what I am paid to do here for this role. Talk to me about no-kill shelters and the controversy that has surrounded that.
You know, no-kill, it comes from a place that, you know, of wanting to do the most possible good. And unfortunately, that term has become a little bit of a divisive one in animal welfare. And, you know, I think there's not a lot there's not a full understanding sometimes of what no-kill actually means. So for that movement, generally what you're looking at is they're saying that they want a save rate of 90% or better. And what that means is the number of animals that have a positive outcome, whether that be they go to foster care whether they go to another shelter or transported to another rescue, or they're adopted, or go into long-term foster, over the number of animals that we take in overall. Lollipop Farm, we are very fortunate. We've done a lot of work, and we are over that 90% rate that is kind of that standard for no-kill. However, we choose not to use that term because, you know, it does give this impression that euthanasia never occurs. And that's just unfortunately not a reality of animal welfare. We do see animals that come in and, you know, whether it be medically that they are suffering and, you know, euthanasia is that best option for them. Or, you know, there's animals that may come in that, you know, are presenting a very real danger to our staff who are trying to feed them or are trying to, and can we provide them a good life during that time while safely maintaining our staff? And so, you know, there's just this reality. And so we choose not to use that term because we want to honor the very hard decisions that sometimes have to be made in animal welfare. And we want to be transparent with our public as well.
So the reason why that term came up for me was because I was off on the internet, which, of course, is the bastion of all truth, as we all know. And in doing my homework in preparation for this interview, that popped up several times.
Yeah.
But what I also see is I live over in this Rochester South Wedge, and on next door, I see that there are a lot of people who are doing pet adoptions, even if they're temporary placements, to help through that. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think what you're probably seeing are foster homes.
Foster,
okay. And these are volunteers. They're regular, everyday people that take an animal into their home while they're awaiting their permanent home or adoption. Lollipop Farm has a wonderful network of fosters that we rely on really heavily, especially in the summer, which we call that kitten season, because so many kittens are born. And without them, we wouldn't have the space at the shelter to accommodate as many as we do. But many organizations throughout Rochester and everywhere else operate on a foster home basis. So
yeah, and to give you an idea, we have hundreds of foster care families that are helping us out. When you talk about kitten season, I feel like I always talk about kitten season that like everybody sounds like it's so cute and fluffy, and it is. But also when we talk about how many, there's 150 kittens right now in foster care. And so that's just a staggering number of people that we need to rely on to provide that day-to-day care before they're large enough to be spay-neutered and to go on to their own families. We recently took in this large case of dogs where we had, in the end, over 156 dogs.
Wow.
And we could not have done it without foster care. It's just so important. And a lot of these guys were under-socialized, as you can imagine, coming from a single place. And so, you know, they have been tremendous in helping these dogs to rehabilitate and learn to be dogs in the sense that we all know them.
Excellent, excellent. Dr. Ingersoll, I'm going to bring up another potentially dangerous conversation. This one is about indoor or outdoor cats. We have always kept, I made sure that our cats are indoor cats, but I have friends that have told me that I'm being mean, that a cat's natural thing is to be outside, and I'm somehow hurting the cat's development and love if we do that. I also know that cats are, frankly, an invasive species. I know nobody wants to hear me say that. And if you love your songbirds in the yard, do you want to speak to that at all?
I can. So I sort of fall on the spectrum of sort of towards the middle in that as long as owners and the pet and the veterinarian, et cetera, they have a good conversation as to the potential risks of having an outdoor indoor-outdoor cat or as you said, just an indoor cat. And you discuss and you educate clients. I'm okay with what they decide. So some people are correct in the fact that indoor cats can have behavior problems in the fact that their environment is not enriched enough. So they're not doing enough and they're bored and then they become destructive and that bond with their pet suffers because you don't want to come home to your furniture being destroyed by your cat. That's expensive and frustrating. But it comes down to an education and an enrichment sort of plan that can happen with the owners and the cat and keeping them indoors. York Animal Hospital happens to be out in the country a ways. And so we have a lot of owners that don't live in the city and their cats go in and out and they understand. I talk to them the risks about being hit by a car, being, you know, attacked by coyotes or other wild animals, et cetera. My personal opinion is that, if the owners are doing what they can to protect their cats and the cat wants to be outside, that's an okay decision for them. Just like it's okay. My cat is an indoor-only cat, but he has all the enrichment that I can provide him so he doesn't destroy my house. And he can, get those natural instincts out and have a high quality of life.
Thank you for a far more nuanced answer than was rattling around in my head because of just my experience, which is limited. I'm coming into this, admittedly, not knowing a lot and here to learn from you. I have seen people concerned where coyotes have been getting cats, especially they're getting larger and moving closer to the suburbs, through the suburbs into the city. So that is a real danger.
Yeah, I have unfortunately treated multiple animals, especially in the emergency situation, which we suspect or the owners have witnessed them being attacked.
So I had another question in mind. I guess I should have written it down so that it didn't slip away from me so quickly. One of our experiences has been that where the cats have acted out in the house by spraying in places they should not, what we discovered after getting them to the vet that it was an infection or some other discomfort that kept the cat away from the litter box and once that was treated, that behavior went away.
Yeah, so it's a very common, it has about a million different names, Flutie or feline lower urinary tract disease, sterile cystitis, FUS, feline urinary syndrome, because no one can decide what they want to call it. But it's exactly what you're talking about, is cats who are stressed or behaviorally unhappy for some reason in their house will act out, and one of the ways they act out is to mark or urinate and things. They also get like inflammation, so it becomes a medical issue. So they just pee in places because it hurts all the time. So, but that is one of the big things that can happen with indoor only cats, and that's why it's so important for those enrichment protocols to go into place in the house for those animals, so that they have a high quality of life and they're not bored or stressed about everything that happens to them. Mm-hmm.
Just in case you're just joining us, just a reminder that this is Connections. I'm Eric Logan, sitting in for Evan Dawson. With us is Dr. Bruce Ingersoll, doctor of veterinary medicine, co-founder and veterinarian at Rochester Emergency Veterinary Services, and a veterinarian at York Animal Hospital, Lindsay Kuhn from Lollipop Farm, an animal intake and resource manager, and Ashley Zay, Lollipop Farm Director of Communications, and of course, you, if you join with us on the call. When you call 844-295-8255, or locally 585-263-9994, or you can email us at connections.org. Ashley, I think you were about to say something.
I was. You know, I think you bring up such a good point about enrichment, and it's so important. And it's also important to know that these animals, they're all individuals, right? So how much enrichment one cat needs is not going to be the exact same that another cat needs, or some cats are going to be more prone to wanting to be outside or may shut down while inside. So, you know, you really have to evaluate your animal as an individual and get help whenever possible. I know Lindsay can say we definitely have some intakes once or twice that are peeing outside the litter box and things like that. We call those pet peeves. We actually have what we call the pet peeves helpline for these types of issues. So they're kind of our frequent flyers of, you know, your cat's not using the litter box. What do you do? And we have volunteers that can help troubleshoot for you, whether it's, hey, have you tried taking them to the vet, or have you tried multiple? Have you changed the litter? Like, there's lots of different ways to troubleshoot some of those situations that if you don't kind of get ahead of, they can add up pretty quickly to feeling like you need to get out of that situation.
Yeah, we see a lot of calls related to, we like to call it house soiling a lot, not using the litter box. A lot of times we find that these are really related to a change in the household or a new pet being introduced. And you can always call the shelter for guidance there, because we can walk you through how to successfully introduce to try to avoid some of these problem behaviors.
Excellent. We're going to take our only break of the hour. And when we come back, just as a reminder, I am here with Dr. Bruce Ingersoll, with Lindsay Kuhn and Ashley Zay to talk about your pet questions. Anything that you would like to call in about, you can be a part of the conversation. When you call at 844-295-TALK or 585-263-9994 or connections.wxxi.org or connections@wxxi.org. And we'll be glad to chat with you when we come back.
I'm Megan Mack. Thursday on The Next Connections, local entrepreneurs say they have a new housing model that could mitigate the region's housing crisis. We talk with them about their work and what ethical real estate investment looks like. Then in our second hour, a new report outlines how ALS can be made a livable disease within a decade. We talk with experts, caregivers, and people living with ALS about improving quality of life. Talk to you Thursday.
We're back. This is Connections. I'm Eric Logan, sitting in for Evan Dawson. We're talking about how various organizations are supporting animals and their families or pets and their owners during the current veterinary crisis. Joining me are Dr. Bruce Ingersoll, doctor of veterinary medicine, co-founder and veterinarian at Rochester Emergency Veterinary Services, and also a veterinarian at York Animal Hospital, Lindsay Kuhn from Lollipop Farm, who is an animal intake and resource manager, and Ashley Zay, Lollipop Farm Director of Communications. And of course, with you, when you call at 844-295-8255 or 585-263-9994, or when you email us at connections.org. We had a question offline earlier that said the caller wants to know if they're doing vaccination for cats on the August 27th event at Greater Harvest Church.
Yes, we are doing vaccines for cats at that event. We'll also have cat supplies, so come on down and see us.
Excellent, excellent. We have Susan from Canandaigua on line one who has a comment about cats. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, thanks everybody. I just was listening to all the I don't know, options for cats being indoors or outdoors. I promise you, if you are letting your cat out in your neighborhood, none of your neighbors want that cat pooping, peeing, and spraying on their property. It is so incredibly inconsiderate. I do not agree with just letting your cat roam around a neighborhood, ruining the garden that I took a lot of time to, you know, and money to take care of. So that's my comment.
Susan, thanks for calling. I knew that I'd opened up a little bit of a can of worms, speaking of birds, because they like worms. But I knew that I'd open up a bit of a can of worms. But Susan, thank you very much for that, and I appreciate you calling in today. So that is probably going to be the ongoing discussion, indoors or outdoors, and I think you've been very you've added a bit of nuance to the question, that it's not a yes or no question, and that we do need to be aware of our animals and what their particular needs are.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the more you know as an owner, I think the better decisions you can make for your individual pet, and the more that you can information you can provide, the resources that, you know, Lollipop or your veterinarian, et cetera, the more information you can provide them, the better they can help you with that as well.
Excellent, excellent. Also, oh yes, please.
I was going to say, Susan brings up a point about spraying, and I just want to say that whether your cat is indoor or outdoor, I feel like I would not be a good Lollipop Farm representative or an animal welfare person if I didn't say the importance of spay-neuter, because spay-neuter really can mitigate that, whether or not they're spraying inside or outside, and it can really mitigate their need to wander as far away from the home or from their home base. So spay and neuter your pets, everyone.
And I will say, I live in the Wedge as well, and I have a cat that visits my house and lives there, doesn't live, but lays on one of my windowsills, and I call him Window Cat, and I love him, and I have no idea who owns him, where he comes from, but he is not my cat, so.
I can relate. I'm also a city resident and have a few cats that visit my home. I think, you know, it's important to be considerate of your neighbors, but also to have a conversation. If there's an issue or concern, because people love their pets, and I'm sure that changes could be made to sort of satisfy everybody and come to a resolution.
Excellent, excellent input. Yes, and we do as well have a couple of cats that had historically come and hung out on the front porch. I saw that as a positive because it kept the squirrels from digging into the flower pots. So it kind of worked in our favor. Once again, we are here talking about your pets, your animals. I'm Eric Logan, sitting in for Evan Dawson on Connections. We're talking with Dr. Bruce Ingersoll, with Lindsay Kuhn, and with Ashley Zay about your information. So Johanna is here from Rochester, and she is very thankful for the emergency clinic but has trouble finding services that used to be at the emergency vet and wants to know if that'll be offered. Let me see if I can bring her on right now.
Hello. Hey,
welcome.
Hi. I also live in the South Wedge. I remember the emergency clinic was also attached to the specialty services. And I'm so grateful about the emergency clinic. But my dog developed a lump, and it was cancer. And I ended up having to go to Syracuse. God, it was arduous. I'm 84 years old. I ran out of people to take me there. Winter was coming, and they said he had a 60% chance of recurring. So I figured, well, he's got a 40% chance of it not. He's 13, and so he and I decided that we would just stay here, take our chances, and work with my local vet. But is there anything in the offing about specialty services returning?
So at REVS, we are working diligently on that. Unfortunately, the space we're in right now is about 2,500 to 3,000 square feet in size. The old VSES with their emergency and all their specialties was about a 30,000 square foot building. I don't know exactly, but I would say about 20,000 was probably towards medicine. The other, they had an educational program and stuff. So we're about somewhere about a tenth of the size that they really were. And that's the importance. One of the biggest hurdles for us getting those services back in the Rochester area in a facility that is emergency and the specialty is the space. And so when we get a new building, that is going to be one of the things that we look at. In the meantime, there are many of those specialists are working throughout the city in different referral hospitals and doing that. And so there is availability. It's just a little bit more difficult to find them because you have to find out where they're at, when they're there, et cetera. But there are surgeons and internal medicine specialists and ultrasound capabilities, et cetera, in the city still. Unfortunately, for owners, and even your veterinarian, it's a lot more legwork to try and figure out where they are and where they're available. But
it's worth doing.
But they are out there, and they are working their tails off trying to help everyone.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for that. I wish that you could just move into the old facility. maybe some big donor will come along.
we've been hoping, and the people in Rochester have been more than giving. They have been wonderful. Yes. It's everything I tell people, everything works out for a purpose. And so we're getting there. It's just a labor of love at this point, and it'll happen, I'm sure of it.
Thank you. And my little dog is doing fine. This was last February or January or something, maybe even October, but he's doing fine.
That is wonderful to hear.
Thank you, Johanna.
Thank you also for like your dedication to your pet, because honestly, like, you just sound like such a prime example of why conversations like this are so important. Human animal bond, it's just extraordinary the lengths everyone goes for their pets. And just thank you for being amazing.
Thank you. And I would like to put in a word for people adopting, especially older people adopting older dogs. There's so much love there. You don't know until you've experienced it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We have our Senior for Senior program for that reason. So people over the age of 60 can adopt a cat or dog for free that are 6 years and older. So that's one of the reasons, because those senior dogs and those senior cats, they may stay at the shelter for a while, but they have so much love to give. So thank you.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Johanna, for calling today.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have taken advantage of that senior adoption. In fact, we only adopt, when it comes to dogs, we only adopt older dogs because, well, partially because it's free, but probably more so because it's sort of a known quantity. But one of the things that happens, when we adopted Soren, we discovered very quickly that Soren owner must have been a hunter or something, because he knew about boats, right? I mean, when we went out on a boat, he was like in that boat in a heartbeat, in the water. He was a Malamute Husky mix. But as he got older and ill, and we took him to the vet and got X-rays, somebody said, "Who's been shooting your dog?" And he says, "What do you mean, who's been shooting our dog?" He says, "Well, the dog is full of buckshot in the back." And ultimately, that buckshot ended up causing cancer that went throughout the animal, and we had to put him down. And we got Soren from Lollipop. Our animals are living longer, so as they live longer, we are going to see more of that cancer and other kinds of those aging diseases. Doctor, would you like to talk about those?
That's multifaceted. I think, yes, our animals are living longer, so we're seeing more of those aging issues and things. But in addition, as the generations come up and they start owning, you know, we're now into the millennials, Gen Zers, et cetera, owning animals. The way they view animals is much different to some degree than Gen Xers and baby boomers. They are much more part of the family. They are a sibling. They are a child, and the Gen Zers, et cetera, are willing to spend lots and lots of money fixing their animals and figuring it out. Not that our other generations aren't, but it is becoming more common. And it sort of creates a really interesting issue in the veterinary world in the fact that we are already extremely low on veterinarians. We're facing an extreme shortage in the United States, and now we're expected to do more. And so it's kind of double fold in that we had a huge retirement and people leaving the industry with COVID, and then we have these new generations coming in and wanting to do everything under the sun, which is wonderful for the animal in most cases. but it's creating even more of this gap of care and that we can provide because we just don't have the veterinarians.
I have to encourage our kids to go to veterinary school.
Yeah, and I think that kind of brings us back to those community events, because it has become harder to get into a veterinarian. So we're hearing a lot from adopters where getting that first visit sometimes is even a struggle. But people who are getting either a puppy or a kitten, you know, they're having a hard time getting an appointment or finding a veterinarian that's taking new clients. And so I think, Lindsay, you could probably speak a little more to that.
Well, I think the big focus of these events is prevention. Like, we want to meet you at these events and prevent a disease like parvovirus so that you don't have to show up at an emergency clinic with a very, very ill pet. So a huge focus here is making sure that we're setting up these people and their pets for success to avoid emergencies that are both very costly. But parvo can be deadly, and we want to make sure we're trying to make a dent in the likelihood of that.
Excellent. Thank you. I have Joyce on line one, who has a question about the protocol for managing a cat that sheds tremendously. Joyce, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome to Connections.
I'm wondering if there is a protocol or even something to follow to manage or eliminate profuse shedding of a Scottish Fold cat.
There are multiple things that could happen that could be causing that. And so to speak over the radio and never have seen your cat would be slightly inappropriate for me. But there are definitely things that you can do to prevent that or I should say mitigate that. Usually shedding is, you know, we're not going to stop it. But I would, if you have a veterinarian, I would definitely pick their brain excessively about that. But there are lots of things that can help with that. And I don't want to practice medicine over the radio, unfortunately.
trust me, doctor, that is a disclaimer for every medical profession we have, including for humans, that we want to be very careful. So we totally get that. There's no magic head and shoulders for your pet.
Do we know what causes it?
Again, there's multiple. It can be anything from stress to dermatologic issues to other potential problems. So there's a million different causes and a million different answers.
Joyce, thank you so much for calling today. Really, really do appreciate your calling. We have Mary from Rochester who has a question about spay and neuter. Mary, welcome.
Hello. Yes, I have an issue with, I know so many people that are having a terrible time getting their pets spayed and neutered at clinics because they're almost impossible to find low-cost clinics now. Is this ever going to come back to the time when we could get in within months to a clinic and get our animals spayed and neutered? I know Animal Control Downtown doesn't even do it anymore, so that's cut down helping a lot of people. Is there any plan in place to make more arrangements for that?
I think that right now, like as far as the spay neuter incentive program at Lollipop Farm, they are working diligently to catch up. We recently had another vet join the team. So we're making huge efforts to try to catch up with a backlog of animals that need to be spayed and neutered. But I don't know of a simple solution, but we are certainly trying and chipping away and hope to see more options available soon.
Yeah, I think we have.
Oh, I hope so. The kitten population is just completely out of control. You know, they're just everywhere on the street. They're starving, and you know, people's excuses. Well, I can't afford, you know, $600 to get my cat spayed. So there's got to be, you know, more options out there for local income people.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Lindsay mentioned, we are trying to increase our capabilities of doing that. You know, I was talking to somebody in the clinic, and you know, it's hard because there's so much that happens in the back end of Lollipop Farm and other facilities that, you know, people aren't even aware of. Like I was talking to them, they did about 9,000 surgeries last year alone, and that includes both our shelter animals and our community pets. So there is no easy solution necessarily right now, especially with a veterinary shortage. But I think everybody in the animal welfare community, you know, like I said, we have 145 kittens right in our foster care. It's in everyone in our community's best interest to solve that problem. And we're all kind of still trying to put our heads together to figure out how we can do that a little bit faster.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, the kitties would appreciate that. Okay. Thank you.
And thank you for your call today.
All right. Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So I've heard the word parvo several times, and actually I included it in my introduction because, once again, the internet tells me all kinds of things, but I did not look up what parvo means. I had never heard of it before. What is parvo?
So parvo is a virus that causes severe vomiting and diarrhea in dogs and it also can affect their bone marrow. It affects young dogs. Puppies most, and they are the most affected. And so getting your dog vaccinated early on against that virus is extremely important to prevent the disease, or if they are exposed to it, to, you know, minimize any effects from it. And so puppies should be vaccinated starting at 6 to 8 weeks, and then every 3 to 4 weeks until they're about 16 to 18 weeks old. And then depending on the vaccine your veterinarian is using, every yearly or every 3 years for that. And it can be, unfortunately, it can be fatal in a high percentage of dogs.
Yeah, I had not heard of that before. So, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. And I was just going to throw, if you've ever heard of distemper in cats, it is, we call it a different thing, but it's a parvovirus as well. Okay. We call it distemper, and it does the same thing in cats. So cat owners, you should definitely be getting your cats vaccinated similarly for that.
So I'm going to bring up one last controversial topic, because why not? I have the microphone. I can do that. but seriously, the whole idea of vaccinations became very politicized throughout the COVID time frame. Very silly that suddenly something that medically has been proven over the years would become a political football in a way that people would stop doing it. That's why measles is starting to come back in the human population because of that. Have you seen any impact of that in the animal population?
I mean, I don't know the statistics long term, but, you know, throughout the year, we have a pretty constant influx of animals coming to our door that are positive for distemper or parvovirus. Oftentimes, by the time they get to us, they're in a very critical state. And it's really important to remember that these illnesses are contagious, and we're an animal shelter full of animals. So, you know, we'll do everything we can to help the owners with treatment, you know, but it's very difficult for us to treat them in-house safely and not risk others. So it just kind of continuously falls back to, it's super important to vaccinate, super important to prevent the disease from occurring or being as severe if it's come in contact with. So that's why these events are super important. We do see a pretty high prevalence in certain areas of the city of Rochester, and we've concentrated these clinics in those areas to try to be the biggest help we can be.
Excellent.
And I think that the important thing with these viruses that we're talking about, like parvo, mitigating contact is next to impossible, really. Like when you're talking about how an animal could get this, you're talking about, you know, a dog with parvo may have had fecal matter on a grass a week ago. Yeah, walking down the street, and a week ago, and there's still a little molecule left that your dog stepped in, and then he licked his paw, and then that's all it takes. It's not, you know, you're allowing your dog to play with other dogs or anything like that. So, you know, if you're taking your dog even, you know, anywhere, really, it's so important. It's not just important for you, but it's important for the entire community because it does spread so quickly.
Please,
from a medical standpoint, the veterinary world is moving along with those the more awareness of vaccines in general. And so there's been a lot of research into how often vaccines need to be given and not, quote unquote, over vaccinating. And so there's a lot more knowledge and science out there as to how often we should be vaccinating. You can actually, once your animal is vaccinated, if you can do titers to see how protected your animal still is with that, or you can choose to vaccinate. So there are options, and we realize that people, that the more science we have, the better off we are. And so the industry in and of itself is adjusting to people's thoughts on vaccines as well. So again, it's a great conversation to have with your veterinarian as to what's best for your individual pet.
Thank you for this information, because, you know, our biggest concern has been kennel cough, you know, for our dogs over time.
Yeah, it's one of those accessibility ones again, right? Like, because you hear about kennel cough because of boarding, because that's one of the ones that they definitely want you to be vaccinated, because, again, it just spreads so quickly in that type of environment.
Well, I know we are looking forward to hosting another community outreach event next year with you. So thank you very much for doing that. We think that's very important. As we start winding down, Dr. Ingersoll, are there any last words you'd like to share with our listeners before we sign off?
Absolutely. Look out on rockemergencyvet.com. That's our website. Look for our giving program so that we can get into our new building. There'll be probably in the next week or two, we'll have a huge fundraising event starting.
Excellent. Thank you. Lindsay, any last words?
Please spay and neuter your pets. Call us if you need help. We're happy to help.
Ashley?
Like you, we also have an event coming up. We have the Walk for the Animals September 28th coming up, and it is literally the most fun you can have helping pets in our community. We have a big festival, and it's just a joy to be around, and you're really helping a lot of animals in our community. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce Ingersoll, for being here, Lindsay Kuhn for being here with us today, and Ashley Zay for a very informative hour. And thank you to the crew. Rob Braden, Julie Williams, and of course, Megan Mack, executive producer. And we will see you next time on Connections.